Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on The Charlie Kirk Show, this is an episode you cannot miss. Check out the new and improved CharlieKirk.com for stories I care about and breaking news and analysis, CharlieKirk.com. Consider supporting us at CharlieKirk.com/support. Chip in some money. Become a monthly supporter at CharlieKirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
When running a business, HR issues can absolutely kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, and labor regulations, and HR manager salaries are never cheap. They're an average of $70,000 a year. Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day to day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there are no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambee help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambee.com/Kirk. That's Bambee.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/Kirk, spelled BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. NBA Finals ratings crash again, reaching back-to-back historic lows. It couldn't have happened to a better group of people. I love sports. I grew up playing sports at Wheeling High School, basketball, football. My entire summers were AAU tournaments to summer 7-on-7 football. I think that football is a huge part of the American culture. I think sports are an important part of the American culture. But as soon as the professional athletic industry started to care more about the Chinese Communist Party than the American people and embrace BLM Incorporated and plaster it all over their court, especially the National Basketball Association, I and millions of other people said, we're done. No more. Go woke, go broke. I'm reading here from Breitbart.com, the great Breitbart.com. Game one of the finals brought its lowest viewership since 1994, and game two was the lowest ever on record. But wait, that was before game three, which beat out game two by becoming the least watched finals game in NBA history. Game two earned a paltry 4.5 million viewers. Hold on, 4.5 million viewers? Can we get some numbers here? I think Tucker Carlson has more viewers than the NBA Finals. I think more people are watching Tucker Carlson every night than LeBron James. Brings me such joy. While Game 3 submarined that number by peaking at 4.395 million. Now, mind you, this is a nearly 70% decline from last year's Finals numbers, which included a team from Canada. Not only that, unlike this year's audience, last year's audience was not on lockdown and did not include the game's best player, LeBron James. He might be the best current player, but he will never be better than Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan still loves his country, unlike LeBron James. And Michael Jordan is also not a fool. And the BLM agenda, Breitbart.com continues, NBA ratings, final ratings crash again. And the BLM agenda stayed as a constant throughout the duration of the season, while LeBron James makes more than enough money to offset the ratings, hit his league will take from the social justice activism that he advances. You go woke, you go broke. A September 2nd Harris poll found that 39% of respondents who identified as sports fans, myself included, felt that the league was too political. Another 19% said they had turned off pro basketball because of the National Basketball Association's deep links with China. the National Basketball Association is not alone in the ratings graveyard, because some people are saying, oh, it's just the NBA. It's because they're overly political. It's also the bubble. There's no fans. It's not the same. And that very well might be true. But according to Deadline.com, the Week 4 Sunday Night Football game drew 11.7 million viewers and had a 3.5 rating among the 18 to 49 demographic from the early numbers. This is a dip from an already abysmal week there with 15 million viewers. And it's a massive difference compared to 2019, when Week 3 of Sunday Night Football game between the Seahawks and the Cowboys drew an astounding 24 million viewers with a 13.7 rating. The NFL season opener was down 16.1%, marking a 10-year low for the league. Major League Baseball has seen its viewership decrease, hovering below 1.7 million viewers in most cases. So, LeBron James and the National Basketball Association, they have made a decision to become MSNBC with a bouncing ball, to become a nonstop social justice protest in the bubble in Florida. So while the National Basketball Association received 4.5 million viewers, Tucker Carlson in the week of September 25th, on that Monday, 4.7 million viewers, Tuesday, 4.7 million viewers, Wednesday, 4.8 million viewers, and Thursday, 4.7 million viewers. More people want to watch Tucker Carlson talk about the news than LeBron James complain about how systemically racist and awful we are. And I think that even liberals and people on the soft left, I think they're disengaging from the National Basketball Association because there's an inherent, not just hypocrisy, but there's an inherent tension in the entire narrative of the National Basketball Association. The narrative is very simple. We're an awful country. Okay. We're systemically racist. Okay. And then after the ninth time they say it and they take a knee during the national anthem, the question is then asked of LeBron or of Kevin Durant or any of the major players in the National Basketball Association. Wait, if we're so systemically racist as a country and black people can't succeed, how did you make $600 million, LeBron? So the National Basketball Association is predominantly black men that are earning millions of dollars a year to then go complain about our country, that we're systemically racist, that we're awful. And I don't believe that America is above criticism. I don't. But I also think that unwarranted, absolute criticism of the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world that is rooted in gratitude, anger, and venom, bitterness, arrogance, and deceit, and not gratitude and appreciation for the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. So what does this mean politically? Well, it's not a good sign for Democrats. It's not. Americans are actually rejecting the over-political nature of athletics. And by the way, the Stanley Cup also had a ratings collapse. The Kentucky Derby had a Indy 500 ratings collapse. I travel a lot for the work that we do at Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action. I give over 300 speeches a year. And we're trying to catch up now that we shut down the country for a couple months. And as I was traveling, I saw someone who wanted to take a picture with me, and I said, yeah, sure, that's fine. And we took a picture, and he was wearing an NHL shirt. And I said, oh, you know, I think it was the Las Vegas, whatever the Las Vegas team is. I'm not really a big hockey fan. I know the Blackhawks. They've won a couple Stanley Cup finals. Anyway, I said, so what's going on with hockey? They said, oh, the Stanley Cup is on. I had no idea the Stanley Cup was happening. No idea whatsoever. And one of our team members here on the Charlie Kirk Show said it best. Sports has always felt kind of part of the zeitgeist of our country, traditionally and usually. And now it has felt outside of it. Hockey is the least political of all the sports. But even baseball has now gone woke. They're going to go broke. So sports will have one of two options, and basketball in particular. LeBron James and Kevin Durant and the National Basketball Association, they could do one. Well, they could do three things. But the current status quo is one of those things. They're probably not going to continue it because it's unsustainable. So they can do one of two things. They can retreat from the over-political nature of this basketball season, just get away from it, and go back to how things should be in athletics. Or they will double down and basically say, we do not care about American-based audience. We are going to pander more to the Chinese Communist Party. We are going to disregard the entire American sport market. And we don't care if we go woke and go broke because the Chinese Communist Party will bail us out. Sports have collapsed in this country because of the left. They destroy everything they touch. New polls out of Florida, but something seems to be amiss. One new poll has the president tied in Florida. 45-45. 45%, 45%. Biden and Trump. USA Today Suffolk poll. But another poll came out that showed Joe Biden up 6 points. Again, some of these polls might be right. Some might be wrong. I think we have to take a little bit of humility when we approach these polls and not just dismiss all of them as being wrong. Just most of them are wrong. So a University of North Florida's public opinion research lab, one of the top pollsters in Florida, they just actually admitted they made a massive mistake. So they said they're up 6 points. But Sam on Twitter, at Sunshine Saint St8 Sam, said, there is no real world that exists where Trump is winning 47% of the Florida's Hispanic vote, but is losing to Biden statewide by 6 points. And so the University of North Florida got called out on their error and replied, this is actually a typo. Incorrect data was accidentally placed in the Hispanic column. The data in the smaller crosstabs above in the press release with Hispanic sample oversample is correct. The corrected report will be up on our website shortly. We apologize for any confusion. But as far as we know, the University of North Florida has not corrected their poll. And look, the USC poll also has similar mistakes happening where they are oversampling Hispanics. And as they are oversampling Hispanics, President Trump is winning record and historic levels of support in the Hispanic community. And so there's a couple takeaways from this. Why is the president doing incredibly well with Hispanics? Two reasons. Number one is BLM Incorporated. Hispanic voters typically are first or second generation Americans. They're from Cuba, they're from Central America, Mexico, South America. Especially in Florida, there's a lot of Cubans and South Americans, especially people that have fled socialism or some form of unstable government. Some form of a government that's been corrupt, some form of government that has been uncertain. And so Hispanic voters traditionally do not think kindly towards war on law enforcement, police, law and order, discord, or disunity on the streets. And also there's a general ingratitude towards the BLM Incorporated movement. BLM Incorporated, which should be labeled as a terrorist organization by our federal government, their entire movement is that this place is awful, we have to burn it down to the ground. That's basically the thesis statement of BLM Incorporated. And Hispanic voters that traditionally are very thankful that they live in America, very happy that they live in this wonderful country full of opportunity, they look at BLM Incorporated and say, I don't think this place is as systemically racist as you might think. We're actually seeing our life get better. In fact, if you want to trade places and go back to Argentina, Venezuela, Colombia, or South America, we'd be more than welcome to make that trade. In fact, I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee this last weekend. I met a wonderful woman who was from Colombia. She was an orphan. She was adopted. And she said, people have no idea the suffering that can take place on this planet when government gets corrupt and doesn't look after the needs, wants, and interests of its citizens. And she said when she sees BLM Incorporated marching in the streets with their fist raised with anger and venom and outrage, almost seeking revenge, She has no patience for that whatsoever. And she even told me that at times she struggles with Trump's tone and Trump's dialogue or the way that he goes about handling press conferences. But she is going to vote for President Trump confidently and proudly because she is thankful that she lives in America. So number one is the BLM incorporated issue, why President Trump is doing historically well with Hispanics. Number two is the issue of life and the family. President Trump is the most pro-life president in American history. Hispanics are family-oriented people. And Joe Biden and the Democrat Party have almost become disintegrationists when it comes to the nuclear family in America. Hispanic voters actually revere law enforcement. That's why you see so many Hispanic cops. Hispanic voters want to live quiet and peaceable lives. Hispanic voters are not okay with post-birth abortions. They are not okay with the rampant amount of social leftism that has permeated the Democrat Party. So the Democrats might think that Hispanics are single-issue voters, that they just want open borders and amnesty for everyone. President Trump is demonstrating that they care about law and order, life, culture, and the family. Sometimes small changes can make the biggest difference. So I'm going to talk about something you might be a little surprised. Socks. Changing your socks can make a huge difference in your daily walks or while hitting the links on the golf course. Runners worldwide have made Features, F-E-E-T-U-R-E-S, Features, their sock of choice. And by the way, I tried it on. It's unbelievable. So comfortable. Nice fit. It's terrific. I can tell you that Features is a really great product. Really is. They're a lifetime guarantee for Features. They're so durable and long-lasting that if you're unsatisfied at any point, they'll give you a replacement pair. No questions asked. Features is a proudly family-owned business. Hugh Gaithner founded the company in 2002, and now he and his sons Joe and John own and operate the company in North Carolina. Their mission is to create products that help you achieve your personal best. Features socks will change how you feel about your socks forever. And you can get $10 off your first pair of Features when you use the code KIRK, K-I-R-K, at features.com. That's F-E-E-T-U-R-E-S.com, promo code KIRK, K-I-R-K, for $10 off your first pair of Features. Sweden. I think we have discussed the Scandinavian state more in the last 6 months than the last 6 years of our country. For the record, I love Sweden. Great people, great culture. But who would have thought that Sweden would have done a better job of protecting natural rights and individual liberty than America? Now, the activist media did everything they possibly could to attack Sweden. You remember along May and June and July, the activist media was going out of their way intentionally to say that Sweden was a total catastrophe. So just looking at the New York Times coverage of Sweden tells a very important story. June 22nd, 2020, a man by the name of Thomas Erdbrink. We're going to read a couple pieces from him. Thomas Erdbrink on June 22nd, 2020. Sweden tries out a new status. Pariah state. Sounds terrible. He says, quote, while most countries went into lockdowns this spring, Sweden famously refused and now has suffered roughly twice as many infections and five times as many deaths as the other three nations combined. Sounds really bad. He goes on to talk about how Sweden is betraying their citizens, going back to the thesis statement that it is a pariah state. This entire thing is a hit piece on a country. Never thought I'd see it before, but it's a hit piece on a country and their handling of the virus. Now, Sweden, God bless them, they really didn't care. Unlike most people that get attacked by the activist media, they're like, vi trust the data. It's like very simple, right? Like they just look at the data and they make informed decisions. Here's what it says. Sweden is sort of a regional hegemon, and its critics say, given to a certain arrogance and exceptionalism that can be grating. Kind of a veiled take at anyone that believes in American exceptionalism. It finishes by basically saying that this is a experiment in Darwinian viral contraction. June 22nd, Thomas Erdbrink, Sweden tries out a new status, pariah state. Remember that name, Thomas Erdbrink. On July 7th, a different reporter by the name of Peter Goodman says Sweden has become the world's cautionary tale. You see, the New York Times wasn't pleased with just Thomas Erdbrink's comparison of a pariah state. Basically, it's the same article, copy-paste. I mean, it's the exact same thing. Sweden suffers a vastly higher death rate. Sweden's central bank expects its economy to contract by 4.5%. That would have been nice. We were negative 30%. There's a little bit of data here that kind of gives Sweden the benefit of the doubt a couple weeks later, but basically it's another hit piece, this time by Peter Goodman. So the intellectual framework that a lot of people were making decisions from the entire summer is that Sweden is bad, end of discussion. Shut up, idiot, if you dare disagree. Science is awful. We trust dogma. Sweden is bad. They're only doing this because they hate the least of these. So Thomas Erdbrink might be a nice guy. He decided to try out his pen again. Thomas Erdbrink has a new story in the New York Times that would have probably slipped under your radar for obvious reasons, because the activist media wouldn't have highlighted it. But this is in the New York Times. I mean, I got to give the Times credit for publishing this story. So June 22nd, 2020, Thomas Erdbrink, Sweden tries out new status, pariah state. Now, September 29th, vilified early over lax virus strategy. Sweden seems to have scourge control. Vilified by you, Thomas Erdbrink. You're the guy that vilified them. It should have been, I vilified Sweden by calling them a pariah state. Thomas Erdbrink says, after having weathered high death rates when it resisted a lockdown this spring, Sweden now has one of Europe's lowest rates of daily new cases. Whether this is an aberration remains to be seen. Yeah, sure, Thomas Erdbrink. Goes on to talk about how Sweden has had very little economic crisis. They're not seeing an increase in suicide, how they do not have increase of cases, how their death rates are unmoved, that they are not wearing masks, that they are out in public. And as Heather McDonald talked about in her City Journal article, I will quote, "There is no correlation globally between the degree of lockdowns and coronavirus death rates. Countries such as Britain that impose strict lockdowns have massively higher death rates than most countries such as Japan. Countries with extensive mask wearing show no better results than severals where people breathe freely." So Thomas Erdbrink quietly, completely reversed course. It says here, Sweden is well prepared for a potential resurgence. Thomas Erdbrink quotes Dr. Hildebrand, quote, "We change behavior. I don't see anybody shaking hands, for example. Life is back to normal. But of course, there could be a second wave. Some experts believe that Sweden is now fully in control of the virus." Quote, "There are indications that the Swedes have gained an element of immunity to the disease, which together with everything else they are doing to prevent the infection from spreading, is enough to keep the disease down," according to a scientist from Copenhagen, which is in Denmark. He stressed that the country could have avoided the high death toll at the beginning, but that Sweden has regained control in mid-April when deaths declined steadily, and that they are ready for anything that might come their way. So the New York, I got to give Thomas Erdbrink credit. With no self-admission or self-awareness whatsoever, he takes one of the most dramatic 180s I've ever seen for a journalist in the New York Times. But I will give the New York Times credit. I mean this with no sarcasm. The fact they published this is very interesting. I don't really know what to make of it. It's very interesting. So Sweden, which was attacked by everybody, including Thomas Erdbrink, is now the model. Daily new deaths in Sweden down dramatically. Since mid-July, coronavirus cases, 96,145, deaths, 5,883. The per capita rate is far lower than nearby Denmark or the Netherlands. In early September, 1.2% of tests in Sweden were positive, compared to about 7% in northwest England, one of Britain's hardest hit areas. The fact that Sweden did not lock down and now has fewer deaths per capita than the United States, which did experience economic lockdowns in most parts of the country, does not prove anything. What it does prove is that lockdowns don't work. We're quoting from a piece here. CNN, late September, some countries are eyeing Sweden's light-touch COVID response. It's a gamble that could backfire. People say we must trust the science. What science was Sweden operating from? Does epidemiology, does it act differently? Do viruses act differently in Stockholm than in Sacramento? Do the laws of nature operate differently in Stockholm than Syracuse? Or maybe the Swedes have more reverence and value for individual liberty and initiative than we do. Maybe the Swedes actually wanted what's best for their country. They saw no dramatic increases in suicide, alcoholism, social isolation, antidepressant medication. They now have basically built herd immunity. Their economy is fractionally down, but not severely down. There's no depression at all whatsoever. No 100,000 businesses that have gone bankrupt like we did in America. And even the New York Times has reversed its course from calling it a pariah state to now having the virus under control, having the scourge controlled. And even CNN has admitted that things are going well in Sweden. Some people say that, oh, I don't know if there's anything to learn from Sweden. How about this? You trust the data and the science, which they accuse us of not trusting, by saying, do you know that the death rate or the survival rate for 0 to 19-year-olds is 99.97% of only those that we know that are tested and then have it? And the infection rate is far beyond the testing rate. So many people get infected that are asymptomatic. So many people get infected that have a cold and never get actually tested. Some people get tested. Some people get infected and they never submit themselves into a hospital, so they don't get logged into data. So some of this data is already flawed as it is. And so now Sweden, which gets categorized by many people, myself included at times, as being a socialist country, has a much higher tolerance for risk than Western-centered countries that were founded on liberty and freedom. And the question should be why? Well, you go back to the early writings of why Sweden did what they did. It's because they never were convinced that this disease was as deadly as the models suggested. They were never convinced that lockdowns would actually help stop the spread. It might help temporarily slow the spread, but it's only a prolonging mechanism. And Sweden was never convinced that permanently shutting down an entire economy would be beneficial to a country, to a middle class. And now you see the other Scandinavian countries, Finland, Norway, Denmark, are suffering dramatically. And the per capita rate is down. If you look at the chart of Swedish deaths for the Chinese coronavirus, it's just absolutely plummeted. Which, by the way, in every other neighboring country, Germany, France, not totally neighboring, but regionally, they will have a huge acceleration of Chinese coronavirus death rates. Do you know we've lost more people to suicide than the Chinese coronavirus in the state of California, young people? Lockdowns are not a victimless action. And by the way, if you subtract the three lockdown states from the United States totals, New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts, which account for 31% of all the deaths, the United States numbers suddenly plummet to 399 per million, below Bolivia and slightly above Colombia. New York City is thinking of shutting down again. Andrew Cuomo, who's coming out with his new book to brag about how well he did on the virus, he calls it the European virus, not the Chinese coronavirus. They're going to lock down again. Where is the scientific data that proves that lockdowns work? I will quote from Heather McDonald, City Journal. There is no correlation globally between the degree of lockdowns and coronavirus death rates. Why are you doing something where there's no data? What science are you following? Show me the science, lockdown experts. Aaron Ginn, friend of mine, statistician who's been on the Charlie Kirk Show, said, quote, 1 in 10 has seriously considered suicide in the previous month, about twice as many who had thought of taking their lives in 2018. Lockdowns are killing people. The Swedes got it right. Maybe it's time we start learning from our socialist friends in Europe. In our fast-paced world, it's tough to make reading a priority, at least it used to be. A new app called Thinker, T-H-I-N-K-R, has solved that problem by summarizing the key ideas from new and noteworthy nonfiction, giving you access to an entire library of great books in bite-sized form. We talk about learning all the time. Learning leads to a reawakening. Learn as much as you can every day. Read or listen to hundreds of titles in a matter of minutes, including old classics like Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, to recent bestsellers like Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. If you want to challenge your perceptions, expand your horizons, and become a better thinker, go to thinker.org/Charlie. That's thinker.org/Charlie to start an extended free trial and put your mind in motion. I love Thinker, and you will too. thinker.org/Charlie. There were so many stories I wanted to get to today, but the time is always short. One in particular, I want to talk about Andrew Cuomo, who, of course, walks maskless on the cities in New York. And as we talked about, there is no correlation between countries that mandate masks and don't and the spread of the virus. But Andrew Cuomo, of course, says he wants to fine people. Bill de Blasio says he wants to fine people if they don't wear masks. But then Andrew Cuomo really wants to play into his tyrannical impulses. So someone should probably whisper in Andrew Cuomo's ear, hey, closing the synagogues, not exactly a good statement to make, going after Jewish people. Not exactly that wise. His brother, Chris Cuomo, also went on a crazy rant using some undesirable language. We don't need to play that tape, but the Cuomos have been very, let's just say, unhinged in the last 24 hours. So Andrew Cuomo wants to shut down the synagogues in New York City, which is an affront to two parts of the First Amendment, the Establishment Clause and the Free Expression Clause. And explain to me, Andrew Cuomo. Here's a question for Andrew Cuomo, who wants to shut down the synagogues in New York City. Why are abortion factories open, but you want synagogues closed? Why are weed stores open, but you want synagogues closed? Why are you okay with BLM Incorporated marching in the streets of Albany, of Rochester, and New York City? Right up against each other, no masks, no social distancing. But you have a problem with Jewish people being able to go to synagogue. Andrew Cuomo, what is it about the Jews that bother you so much? Why do you single out Jewish people? Do you have some sort of harboring resentment or prejudice that you'd like to tell us about? Andrew Cuomo, why were you silent when BLM Incorporated defaced an entire city block in front of Trump Tower? But Jewish people just want to worship God. And that really bothers you on an elemental level where you say, if you're not willing to live within my rules, then I'm going to close the synagogues. What gives you the constitutional right to be able to do that? And by the way, where's Chuck Schumer? Where's Chuck Schumer speaking out against this? Who's supposed to be a spokesperson for the Jewish community in New York City? And of course, Andrew Cuomo goes out of his way to attack Jews and Jewish people. Nothing new. The Democrat Party has become the party of anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. But Andrew Cuomo, you call the Chinese coronavirus the European virus because you're probably bought and paid for by the Chinese Communist Party. You're probably a wholly owned subsidiary. And your political career is probably being, I don't want to say held hostage, but probably being decided by a group of Chinese Communist Party affiliates. But what is it about the Jews that bother you so much? Why do you want to close the synagogues? And the answer is, of course, power grabbers and central planners, specifically on the left in the Democrat Party, they have a problem with Jews. Just ask Ilhan Omar, who thinks that Israel should be wiped off the face of the planet. Just ask Linda Sarsour from the River to the Sea, which is code for abolishing the state of Israel. Andrew Cuomo, you should have to answer for your hatred of the Jewish people. And yet, it is Joe Biden, the Democrat Party, that wrongly accuse President Trump and Republicans of somehow embracing and harboring anti-Semitism. It's coming from one side. And you see it right here from Governor Cuomo's office, who wants to go after people of faith for a reason that is yet undetermined. But just so we're clear, Andrew Cuomo is perfectly okay with Planned Parenthood staying open. Andrew Cuomo is okay with liquor stores staying open. Andrew Cuomo is great with looting and rioting. Stealing merchandise. That's an essential and protected activity. Why is Andrew Cuomo being more forceful towards Jews than towards criminal vigilantes that stole millions of dollars of merchandise and burned down businesses all across New York City? Andrew Cuomo's using more fiery language towards Jewish people than towards criminals in the streets of New York. It's more important than ever that you engage in this election. You knock on doors. You make phone calls. The polls are tightening. This election is going to be won on the margins. What a great episode. Please go to the new and improved charliekirk.com for your source of news and information. charliekirk.com for your source of breaking news and insight. Email us your questions, as always, at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's largest student organization on campuses across the country, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. We play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war. And finally, if you want to win a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, hit subscribe and give us a 5-star review. And win the election. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.